At my father's funeral at his local church, Bono and Wyclef Jean sang, the Cardinal of Washington, D.C. presided. But, as usual, Bill Clinton rocked the house. After the Cardinal's homily and comments by my sister Maria and brothers Bobby, Timmy, and Anthony, in my eulogy, Clinton stood up and said, I had the opportunity to observe Sergeant Shriver in two settings, which answered a question that even in the most hopeful times was hard to answer with a straight face. Could anybody really be as good as he seemed? And then he paused and said, I mean, come on now. This is like every other man in this church feels about 2 inches tall right now. I laughed along with everybody else, and more than anything, felt grateful. I had had a father whose shoes I could never fill, to whom I could never measure up, yet I felt no pressure to do so. I just missed him. My siblings had decided I should give his eulogy, and even then, I didn't feel pressure to speak as he spoke. I felt baffled, I suppose, by how he had managed to live as generously, decently, and joyously as he did. And the bafflement would grow over the coming days and weeks, as many of the thousands of emails, phone calls, and letters kept repeating the same phrase to me. He was such a good man. So to try to understand him better, to try to get how he did it, I started to read some of his speeches and a bunch of his letters. He wrote me a letter every day, sometimes two or three, almost every day of my adult life, and I was floored by what he had written. Too often I had grabbed his letters and stuck them in a file, thinking I could read them someday soon. But with a wife, three young kids, and a job that took me all around the country, I just never found the time to read so many of his notes. And so many of his speeches were also in that file. At first, I just thought it was a nice phrase, this good man thing, but it was repeated so often that I came to see it as the best way to describe him, especially after I saw the decency and goodwill that filled his writings. He was a great man on the stage of life. He founded the Peace Corps, helped my mom create Special Olympics, organized and managed the funeral of my uncle, President Kennedy. He created President Johnson's War on Poverty, creating programs like Head Start, Job Corps, VISTA, and Legal Services, to name just a couple. He coined the term bioethics and worked against nuclear war. The list is, as even President Clinton said, humbling. But more importantly, he was a good man in his home, to his wife of 56 years, with his kids, with his friends, and in his community. We didn't care that he was a great man. We all knew him as a good and loyal friend, a supportive father, a devoted husband. He did something 100 times a day that most of us do once a month. Whenever he engaged with a person in any activity, he focused solely on them as if that person were the only person in the world. An old friend of mine wrote to me that he had not been in a church for 2.5 hours in his entire life, but when the funeral was over, he actually wished it had gone on longer. He just loved hearing the stories about how Daddy lived his life. So that is why I decided to write this book. I wanted to spend more time around all the great stories, to read what he wrote to me and in his speeches, all in an effort not just to remember him, but more importantly, to try to learn what made him so joyful. So I sat down and started to write about why I thought this 95-year-old man, who had gotten crushed in his two races for national office, who had suffered from Alzheimer's for 10 years, so touched, even transformed people. And I centered on the idea that it was his profound faith, his hope in humanity and for a better world, and his love not just for his family and friends, but, as corny as it sounds, for all the world. Those three principles drove his life and made him a great father, a devout public servant, a humble citizen of the world. I wanted to get a better understanding of those three principles so that I could become a better husband, a better father, and a better friend, so that I could develop a better relationship with God, and so I could do all of that and still make a difference in my job and in my community. That's ultimately what my dad did, and that's why I wrote the book. The only story I'll share is the one of the guy who's helping me with the book. Greg Jordan is a little younger than me. He never met my father, but after hearing some of the stories I told him and digging into some of Daddy's writings, he came to me one day and said, this guy is like Virgil, man. The title is so appropriate. He He was such a good man. I feel like I'm getting a new, really good friend. Greg reads a lot and says some wacky things. So I said to him, Virgil? And he said, yeah, Virgil led Dante through the circles of hell up to hope and peace. Your dad does that for me. He can do that for a lot of people who read this book, even if they never met him. A couple of weeks later, Greg told me he was going to ask his girlfriend to marry him. I congratulated him and asked him what finally made him make the decision. He'd always been kind of a footloose sort of guy. He paused and looked me right in the eyes and said, it was your father. I felt that Sarge would want me to marry this woman that I had hemmed and hawed over for too long, and that he encouraged me in his writings to make the commitment to marriage and to make the commitment to love. I'm hopeful that this book moves people to live a more meaningful life like it did for Greg, one grounded in faith, filled with hope, and blessed by love. This is a storybook, a memoir, even part biography and autobiography. But really, it simply fits into that American tradition of how-to books. Perhaps it even reinvents the genre a little bit. A lot of people are looking for the key to how to live life like my dad did. And I think, if anything, I offer up a few of those steps in this book. Thanks very much.